I'm Ben Bartsch with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Did you know that there's a waiting list of more than 50 children in our community waiting for a mentor? It's just only a few hours a month of your time to invest in a child and make a difference in your community. Be a mentor, become a big, visit Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northeast Florida, and click on Be a Big. Thank you.
E, after spending over a year listening to you talking about being the biggest Minshew fan in the city.
Got a case of Bud Light waiting for you, brother.
I don't drink Bud Light.
What will you chip in personally if ET is willing to pull the trigger on Gardner in round one tonight?
I think it's kind of a no-brainer. We shouldn't need to throw Hennessy into the mix for that.
Is it the hen? Do you want the hen? Is that where we're headed here?
The hen dog.
Hen dog? I'll split a bottle of hen dog with you, Tony.
Yeah, I am praying you get the number one pick.
Oh, that'd be so good, right? Maybe it'll be something like after the first three picks. Any pick after the first three. We'll ET pull the trigger for a bottle of hen. That's the price. And who knows? Maybe, you know what?
Yeah.
Bud Light may still send you a case.
XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Yeah, ET almost forgot to play the intros there because he was in a Henny Hayes right there. Man, what's going on?
The Henny had made me feel so good.
Did you have a hen dog weekend?
Oh, yeah, I had that hen dog in my cup. You know what I'm saying? Mix it a little bit of Sprite, you know, and your boy was all right.
Is that how you like it, Henny and
that
Sprite?
That Henny and Sprite, baby.
All right. Whatever you like, man. You know? Tony, did you have a hen dog weekend?
No.
Why not?
That's tragic, Tony.
What kind of cocktail weekend did you have?
No cocktails.
No?
No.
All right, me
none
either.
For me.
We're going to fix that real soon. Super Bowl weekend.
Oh, Super Bowl. We got to wait till Super Bowl weekend?
No, we don't got to. We can fix that a couple of hours.
Any weekend can be Super Bowl weekend if you invite the right people over. All right. Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday to you. It's one of the last Mondays when Trevor Lawrence is not a member of the Jaguar organization.
Count them down.
All right, just a few more to go.
Yep.
So we're 2.5 weeks out from the NFL draft. Tick tock, tick tock. Moving right along. Hope you had a good weekend, whether yours was filled with Hennessy or any other.
Yeah.
Any other beverage.
Yeah, you know, thinking about this weekend, we got a few weeks left till the NFL draft, and fans have about 4 months till they can go to the stadium and watch Trevor Lawrence play quarterback for their football team. I mean, we're that close to that kind of thing happening. I mean, that is, it's crazy to think that we're at this point, but here we are.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. Nothing going to stop us now, no matter how many mock drafts you throw at us, although we got one thrown at us today. Now, the thing of these mock drafts is that the ludicrousness, the ludiocracy, the you come up with a ludicrous word that doesn't exist for what you can get in some of these mock draft programs when you trade back.
Yeah.
Right? And we'll get into one here. But if ever you were going to consider hypothetically trading out of the number one spot, this would be the way to do it.
Oh my gosh. Let's just say. Yeah.
Let's also say highly, highly unrealistic.
Oh, really?
Yes. Sorry. And I even think the person who sent it to us knows that. But if they're going to give it to you, if they're going to offer that up, you might have to consider this one as this person got quite a haul from one of those mock draft programs out there. Then took all those picks, started trading back up, ended up with 11 of the top 46 selections in the draft. But none of them are named Trevor Lawrence. So that might actually get me to move there on if you give me 7 more picks in the top 46. We have 4 as it is.
Yeah.
But add 7 more?
Holy cow.
I think we can overcome any perceived gap between Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields
at that point in time. Just followed up with, too, there on Twitter, just don't think about the cap ramifications in four or five years.
No, we're going to win the next 4 Lombardi, so who cares? it's all good. And then we'll get rid of all the guys that, you know, we'll keep only these fellows, and we don't have enough fifth-year options to hand out. There's not enough franchise
tags. How are they letting 7 first-round picks walk?
They're all going to walk. It's unbelievable. And salary cap is only up to $350 million, folks.
Yeah.
We can't afford them at this point in time. Today, we will look at the 4th round of Jaguar draft history. Let's go back to Friday when we did our third round poll. It was a pretty solid poll. And Brandon Winter had a little late charge to push up near 30% of the poll and took it down.
Hey.
The best third round pick in Jacksonville Jaguars team history. We gave you the options of Aaron Beasley, Vince Manawai, Brandon Linder, and Yannick Ngakoue. I voted for Manawai. Was your vote for Manawai as well, or was it Bees?
It was Manawai.
Manawai, okay. So we both voted for Manawai because we're old. And we're older. We saw him play. Anyway, Linder got 29.5% of the vote. Jan got 28.4% of the vote. Manawai got 21.5%. And Aaron Beasley got 20.5. So good poll all around, right? Everybody got their, you know, at least 20% of the representation there. There are two ways to go. So we did them both today, right? There are two ways to go on today's poll. The first, who is the best fourth round pick in Jacksonville Jaguars team history, right? Now, the question is, do you include Rob Johnson in the poll? Because what Rob Johnson did as a Jaguar wasn't very much. He played one game, started one game. But what he got for you in return was Fred Taylor and Tavian Banks as well. No slight to Tavian Banks, but Freddie T is the main attraction there. So we know if we throw Rob in the poll, it's, you know, some people are going to be voting on only what the Jags were able to procure in a trade for Rob Johnson. So we made this about factoring in only what the player did as a Jaguar. Well, you had the same exact problem. David Garrard's going to run and hide with this.
Sure.
Even in a much bigger way than Maurice Jones-Drew did with the second round pick. Your options, by the way, Reggie Barlow has not a single vote, people. He's the best return man in team history. And I get it. Like, if you're going to vote for David Garrard, he tops the list. But Ernest Wilford, Cecil Shorts are getting votes in here. Can we throw one vote to Reggie Barlow? Maybe at some point in time. But Reggie Barlow in 96, still far and away the leading punt returner in Jaguar team history, and is the top five kickoff returner as well. David Garrard, who is, to this point, second-best quarterback in franchise history. Ernest Wilford and Cecil Shorts, who really, when you just factor in what they did as Jaguars, their numbers are remarkably similar. Didn't know, you know, so probably the one who got left out in terms of contributions as a Jag was Seth Payne, but I just didn't feel like it rose to the level of these other guys.
Sure.
So, and guess what, Seth? You wouldn't have gotten many votes either, right, when it's all said and done. So Garrard is blowing this out of the water. So we did a bonus question. Who's the best fourth-round quarterback pick in Jaguar team history? And you can factor in anything you like. And I wonder if people – because right now, with over 130 votes, David Garrard's got 72% compared to Rob Johnson's 28. I'm surprised at that. If you're factoring in anything, if you say this pick – was an investment that turned into Fred Taylor. If you look at it that way, I don't know how you don't vote for Rob Johnson as being the best fourth-round quarterback pick in team history. But you can do it however you like. We know these polls are going to be skewed heavily in certain directions today and not going to be balanced in the least bit as far as that goes. We got plenty of new mock drafts out there, Tony, that we will dig into today.
Yeah, it's been a few days.
It has been. Well, we know we can count on our man Ryan Wilson to put out a fresh one every Monday.
Yep.
And he's been doing that for 30-plus weeks, going well back into the season. And what's fun about this one, and I know why they do it like this, because they want you to keep coming back, is we've got a different combination of players than certainly in terms of the top four, because he goes two rounds on this, got a different combination of players than I think we've probably seen at any point in any mock draft for the Jags. Yes, he does start with Trevor Lawrence, so there is that. He did not – it was not able to procure any one team's next three drafts in their entirety in the mock draft trade. So he's got that going on for him. And we're just getting closer, you know, just ticking off the days. That's where we're at right now. Trevor Lawrence and his now bride Marissa tied the knot over the weekend. Jaguars Twitter. I feel like that we brought some attention to the toaster, the smart toaster.
We certainly talked about it on
we
Friday.
We did,
yeah.
And then they collectively got together and bought that smart toaster for the now Lawrence family. And also, they didn't stop there, raised over an additional, I believe, $7,000 that will be donated to whatever Trevor Lawrence's charity is. You know what charity he
I'm not sure
is
no.
most aligned with right
no.
now? I don't know if they did either. I just saw they were saying, hey, let's anything overflow. It'll go to the charity of Trevor Lawrence's choice. So if he's got a you know, if he starts a foundation, something like that. Anyway, it's just a very nice gesture. Jaguar fans continue to do nice things out there. Honestly, give a credit to the Bills Mafia for doing some of this stuff in recent years, you know, and getting a lot of the ball rolling in NFL circles. This is a pretty good pattern or habit or thing to copy, if you
no doubt. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what a nice little gesture to show them that we're ready to welcome them on board. We know you can afford a toaster. But
yes,
if yours ever breaks,
we got you.
We got you, buddy. I just sent out the bat signal.
All the toasters you want.
As many toasters as you possibly need. You know, two slice toaster, $299.95. So that's when you know you've made it, E, or you've almost made it, when you register for that $300 toaster.
Yeah, I ain't there yet.
At your wedding. So trying to remember, I once bought a good friend's daughter a toaster for their wedding, and never got around to sending it.
Oh.
Because it was like a wedding out of state, so looks good in my kitchen. Just say. You may be listening right now.
Was it $300?
It was not $300. Oh. It was considerably less than $100 because I'm not that guy. I'm not that deep with the deep pockets. So, all right, that's what we got going on for you today. Oh, yeah, John Shipley going to join us today from SI. We'll talk about some of the latest scuttlebutt in terms of draft rumors that are out there, and who does John see the Jaguars kind of honing in on perhaps after the Trevor Lawrence selection? Is trade up, trade down, or stay put at 25 the most likely scenario? He'll join us coming up in about 30 minutes today. But today we will determine, I think very easily, who the best fourth round selection in Jacksonville Jaguar team history is. He's been a co-host on this program numerous times. With Tony Smith with ET, I'm Mike Dempsey. If you want to weigh in on the questions of the day or anything else, you can hit us up on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at IME to the T.
Come on, somebody.
And by the way, as he will let you know, the question of the day brought to you by the Carpet Man Flooring.
Ooh.
Right? He's got you covered. He's got your floors covered as well.
And he got those deals. So holla at him.
Pull the deal up. Deals.
Them deal deals.
Like the double deals.
Them almost. Deal deals.
All right. Good to know. Also hit us up on the phone lines with the text line at 641-1010. Text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Jaguars today kicking off a fresh week here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Jags. Jaguars today on 1010XL.
All right, Tony, did you watch much of the Masters this week?
All of it I could.
Snooze fest. Did you fall asleep like every other shot or
no?
Really?
I really enjoyed it.
Woof. Woof. Man. Most boring master. I heard Prosser say it this morning. I agree. Most boring masters I can remember in my lifetime. There may have been another one, but I blocked it out because it was so boring.
Yeah, I wouldn't fight you too hard on that, but I love watching that golf course. Like, I never get bored watching that golf course, and I had a good time watching it.
I did. I can't. I mean, there's no drama whatsoever. Nobody making a move. No, nothing
till
happening.
Late. I mean, what Schauffele did on 16 yesterday, he was right back in it, and then he had a tee shot on 16. Yeah. Mm. I mean, when Matsuyama hit it in the lake behind 15, it was like, oh, well, he's got a shot here.
Mm.
And then, yeah, the tee shot on 16, it
Matsuyama
was done.
Matsuyama was choking down the street. I mean, he had plenty of room to do it.
Oh, yeah. Who knows what would have happened
in the last four.
Yeah, if Schauffele would have just hit the green on 16, what could have happened in that tournament? But he didn't.
Eh.
And Matsuyama gets the jacket.
Hopefully there will be more drama at the Coastal Equipment Guggen Open today at Hidden Hills. So they got a great day for it out there, you know?
They do, yeah.
Especially after yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, for once, sometimes the weatherman gets it right. You know, I was looking last week, like, oh, it's going to be terrible Sunday. Should be good on Monday. And they were right.
Oh, yeah.
They absolutely hit it on the head. All right, let's take a look here. Ryan Wilson, CBS, keeps us on our toes every week because he puts out an updated mock draft. He's been doing it for, I don't know, since the beginning of the last football season, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And things obviously change a lot. But one thing that hasn't, as he said when he joined us, was it last week that we had him on?
A couple weeks ago, whatever the case.
He said Trevor Lawrence in that top spot. No matter who he's been mocking him to, Trevor Lawrence has been in the top spot every one of these mock drafts going back. There's no point in messing with that. And so that's nice to see. I did see one of the CBS mocks had Justin Fields going second One that came out like on Friday, just to mix it up a little bit there. I could buy that a lot more than there's any chance at this point in time. I mean, it's locked in. We've got the toasters engraved, okay? there's no question where Trevor's headed.
Yeah.
He's going to be toasting his bread in Jacksonville, Florida. Thank you very much. So he goes number one, obviously, to Ryan Wilson at CBS. Zach Wilson, Mac Jones is who he's got going to San Francisco. Okay. By the way, that was the mock draft we got. One of our listeners sent it in today. And what he was able to do is on one of these mock draft programs, go out there and trade the number one pick and got San Francisco's entire draft this year, next year, and the year after. Okay. But now, and at first I thought, he says, with that haul, I just kept trading back up and I left our future drafts intact minus our next two second round picks, use those to trade up. Okay. And I was like, wow, you got 11 in the top 46, but then you realize you have nothing after that. So you're still getting 11 guys compared to 10 picks that they have right now. Would you give up the chance to have Trevor Lawrence for this? And this is obviously fantasy land, okay, because something like this is never going to happen. I'm not going to get into some of these ridiculous trades that he was able to make where, you know, he got the 16th pick, and the highest pick he gave up was this year was the 130th. Like, oh, yeah, because teams are just wanting to give you first-round draft picks. But let's assume they were.
But if you compile a bunch of them.
If you could.
Yeah.
Justin Fields at 3,
uh-huh.
Kyle Pitts at 7. Remember, we're trading up like crazy here. We've got 7 first rounders. Okay, we get Justin Fields. We don't get Trevor. We get Justin Fields, Kyle Pitts, Micah Parsons, the linebacker from Penn State, Trevon Merrig out of TCU at 17. Might as well take him at 17, right? Because we're going to use 25 on Greg Newsom, the corner out of Northwestern. Then we're going to come back with Tevin Jenkins. That mean offensive lineman out of Oklahoma State. We're going to grab Kadarius Toney with the first pick of round 2. We've got the second and third picks of round 2, fortunately, as well. Of course, because we get Azeez Ojulari, the edge rusher out of Georgia, Zaven Collins, the linebacker from Tulsa. So now we've got 2 new linebackers to go in our 3-4 defense. Oh, yeah, Rondell Moore, he's sitting out there at 43. Since we own that pick, might as well take him as well.
Yeah.
We got Rondell Moore and Kadarius Toney. And we have Aleem McNeil, who's a defensive lineman from North Carolina State with the 46th pick in the draft. And that selection earned a B+. But surprisingly enough, the Jaguars got an A grade on that. Again, fantasy land.
Yes, it is.
But what would it take? I don't know. I mean, most people have said it would, you know, because what it would take is something that no team would realistically give to get up there. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't do, like, the deal that Philadelphia got to move back to 12, they got the 12th pick and 2 additional first rounders and a third. No way am I doing that for Trevor Lawrence because, you know, those are spread out over 3 years as well. So, would you take a lesser player now, an additional third round pick this year, and 2 future firsts? No. I don't. I mean, you could blow those first. Think about it. What would C.J. Henderson and Caleb Von Chase on if you packaged them together as players get you in a trade? Not a whole lot.
No.
Right? I mean, they are on rookie deals, so you've got them under team control for several years.
Certainly not anywhere near what you invested in them.
Not anywhere close.
No.
Nothing close to that, right? And now, granted, hope they turn into great players, and that's what you have to do. You have to hold and develop and hope that that is the case. But, you know, said it many times, draft picks are like cars. As soon as you drive them off the lot, in other words, you actually select a player, the value goes through the floor. You know, you lose, I don't know what it is, half the value of the car as soon as you drive it off the lot.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. May not be half. I don't know. But you get the idea, right? I mean, because that pick represents potential and what I might do with that pick and who I might take. And once you take it, and especially then a year later, those players haven't immediately lived up to that hype. So, you know, first-round picks are great, but you could have 10 C.J. Hendersons and 15 Caleb Von Chasons, and it won't get you 1 Trevor Lawrence. Just not going to happen. So, and this for Ryan Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Justin Fields. Boom, 4 right out of the gates. Penny Sewell going 5th, Kyle Pitts going to Miami at 6, Ja'Marr Chase going to the Lions, Trey Lance then is the fifth quarterback off the board, and that's Washington trading up to that spot.
Okay.
Okay. Patrick Surtain going to Denver. J.C. Horn going to Dallas. The dream of J.C. Horn. Remember those early mock drafts? J.C. Horn was always coming to the Jags at 25.
Yeah.
They were nice. Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith back-to-back at 11-12, pair of Alabama wide receivers.
Okay.
Rashawn Slater makes a lot of sense for the Chargers. They need that help. Christian Darrisaw, the next best offensive lineman, going next at 14. Micah Parsons, then Elijah Vera Tucker. So he got a little run on three offensive linemen out of four picks. Zaven Collins and Jalen Phillips, a couple of edge rushers we just talked about. I thought Zaven Collins was a Jaguar now after that that mock draft spectacular that we had. Greg Newsom going 19th. He's a Jag also. Tevin Jenkins going 20th. He's a Jag also. See how good that mock was?
Yeah, baby.
Azeez Ojulari. He's a Jag also, right? We got all these guys that are in the top 21. Kwity Paye, Greg Rousseau, Jason Owe, the Penn State edge rusher going to Pittsburgh. Please take him off the board, right? I'd like a guy like who's had one sack in his last year in college. Just one.
Just one?
Just one more than me.
That's all you need.
So the Jags in this situation, Tony, go offensive line. And they take Sam Cosmi, the tackle out of Texas. You know, okay. With an eye towards probably a year down the road. The first round wraps up with Jameen Davis, Carlos Basham Jr. out of Wake Forest, the edge rusher, Caleb Farley. Who knows where he's going to fall to? You know, could you see the Jags taking him? I could.
Sure.
Right? If they're evaluation has him as a top 10 or 12 pick, as some suggested he is, and he claims that he got great news at the medical recheck in Indy, that he was told he'll be ready for the season. What he's dealing with is not a chronic issue, shouldn't affect him in the future. So the doctors know whether that's the case or not. So hope the best for him. Levi Onwuzurike, the defensive tackle, going to Green Bay. Tyson Campbell, the corner out of Georgia, getting some love there in the first round to Buffalo. Jeremiah Owosu-Koramoa, the Notre Dame linebacker. And then Travis Etienne goes with the final pick of round one. So one running back's off the board. Jags take Sam Cosmi with the 25th pick. Then I think it's fun, just a different combination. You got a couple of offensive skill guys going here in round two. Kadarius Toney to the Jags to start the second round. And I'll just skip right ahead to the 45th pick. And Najee Harris out of Alabama. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No. Do I think he'll be there? No. How would you feel if they took a guy like Najee Harris? Particularly if they took him with the 45th pick in the draft.
I mean, I get it. They say they need help in the running back room. I don't disagree that they need help in the running back room. I would prefer someone that doesn't basically fit the same way that Robinson does in that backfield.
I think he may be a little bit better than James Robinson, and that's not a knock on James Robinson, who was terrific last year.
But you're getting him so cheap. You have so many needs on this football team. I would understand why they would take a running back there, but I would prefer, if they're going to take a running back, that it be somebody that is, you know, one of those space guys as opposed to another carry eater.
The guys who came off the board in between included Javonte Williams. He was the next pick. He was 34th. Okay, so two running backs off the board. And people will say, oh, Najee Harris definitely going to be the first. Probably the most likely first running back to go, but I've seen the rankings of these guys all over the place. So I'm not 100% sure. Asante Samuel Jr., Trayvon Merrig. These are just some of the guys that the Jags have been attached to at various points. Rashad Bateman, the wide receiver out of Minnesota. Christian Barmore, the defensive lineman out of Alabama. You'd be like, man, bang, 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 bang. So the way it worked out, Rondale Moore was available at 45, and he actually ended up going with the 46th pick. And Freiermuth went 49th. I would much rather, in this scenario, you go with like Merrig at 33 or Christian Barmore at 33. Go get me a couple of big uglies. I don't mind that. Offensive line, defensive line for 25 and 33, and then get your toy for Trevor Lawrence. I'm with you. I think it's not the best allocation of resources. It's interesting because I haven't seen Najee Harris mocked to the Jags.
No,
Much, if at all. But, you know, you'd get Kadarius Toney, so you'd have a new, I guess, presumably slot receiver, jack of all trades in Kadarius Toney, and a new, you would have to expect, top of the depth chart running back, who's I mean, Najee Harris is an outstanding receiver, man. But James Robinson can catch the ball fine. In fact, he's made some tough catches.
If they took Harris, I wouldn't fight someone that says that they get better at running back. I think they get better.
Yeah.
I don't know what the role would be for James Robinson, and maybe they're not all that worried about it if they're willing to take Najee Harris that early in the draft. I do think it's interesting there, too, with all those picks, including Trevor Lawrence, obviously. That's all offense. Right, like they spent free agency basically addressing defense, and that was the first four picks.
O-line, receiver, running back. Yep.
Spent on the offensive side, and none of those four on tight end, which would be their biggest need beyond quarterback. But again, tight end is a relative need in the league compared to trying to get better at some.
Would you rather have Freiermuth or Najee Harris flat out for the 45th pick? I mean, because if Najee Harris, if you're going to feature him, and he's as good as he was,
I'd probably say Harris, personally.
I think I'd probably go the other way because I know we have James Robinson. You know, you got to factor in, if it were just in a vacuum, yes, I agree with you. But factoring in the fact that James Robinson and Carlos Hyde already on this football team, and you can get it, you'll find, go get Michael Carter in round three, or, you know, if you miss out on him, go get any one of a number of running backs that I think could help your running back room. And James Robinson, I still think Tommy Tremble or somebody like that can help you at tight end too. I guess. I guess I'm just not as confident in the scouting reports that these guys are as good. Like Tommy Tremble, from what I understand, has some work to do as an offensive weapon. Like he's going to give you the physicality, all that. But Freiermuth gives you everything without giving you that crazy, ridiculous athleticism of Kyle Pitts. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to be a really good tight-to-the-formation guy, but he can also make plays in the passing game. I don't know. I'd probably just, as presently constituted, go with Freiermuth at that point. But the whole point is, it's a mock. It's for fun. I'm trying to see. No other running backs came off the board. So, theoretically, instead of taking Najee Harris there, and obviously he wouldn't make it to the third round, you wouldn't expect. But you could have had your tight end and any other running back in this class other than the top three, if you wanted to go with that combo. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what's available to them. Najee Harris could be off the board before they pick at number 25. I don't think that's out of the question at all. I could see Pittsburgh taking him right before the Jags. Could see Miami. Could see the Jets going in that direction. And the longest of shots, but I think it's one to look out for, is Arizona as well. More likely probably trying to get somebody in round two, but you can't write it off. Particularly as some of the top cornerbacks are off the board for that football team. So we're getting down to it, E. Media mock draft starting to take shape a little bit?
Yeah, it's starting to take shape, man. I can't wait.
All right, the plan is the Wednesday, the day before the draft, we will, as has been the case for the last few years, we'll cover picks 1 through 16. XL Primetime will pick up, so we each get a Jaguar selection. I have a feeling we're going to get ours right, which is nice, and we'll see how that works out. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Coming up next, though, we'll talk with John Shipley from SI's Jaguars coverage. A lot of Gator stuff out there as well. SI's Jaguars coverage as from Jaguar Report. We'll find out what kind of combination he's looking for from some of those picks that come after number one overall. What are the priorities in terms of positional need for the Jacksonville Jaguars, assuming the values of the players match up? We'll get into that coming up next. You want to be a part of it, 641-1010 on the phone lines or the text line, or hit us up on Twitter. Or poll question today asking about the best fourth round selection in Jacksonville Jaguars team history. David Garrard running and hiding with that one right now. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and ET, Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It really wouldn't shock me if they took Barmore, just because it seems like they placed such an emphasis on there, and it seems like guys like Taven Bryan are being phased out. But on the other hand, just looking at all the moves that they made in free agency, I still keep coming back to thinking that they take somebody at 25 who can help Trevor out.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Let's help Trevor out with that toaster. Check. All taken care of. Jaguars Twitter is taking care of the smart toaster. It will be perfectly toasted bagels from now on for Trevor and Marissa. Tony, before we get to John Shipley here momentarily, somebody asked, what about the Jags getting the running back out of North Carolina? You think that's a good pickup? Well, it depends on which running back we're talking about. Like, Javonte Williams, to me, again, very similar guy to James Robinson. So it depends on the investment. I think there's a big difference between investing the 45th pick or certainly the 33rd pick as opposed to the 65th pick or maybe even later on a speed back. Like if you can get Michael Carter in the third round, possibly the fourth round, as opposed to, like, I think Javonte Williams is a little bit better of a player than Michael Carter, but I think, like we said, you got James Robinson who can carry the load for you, at least the 60% of the load for you very easily, carried 90% of the load for you last year, although the load wasn't as heavy because, you know, you didn't have as many offensive plays and possessions because you weren't as good at football.
Yeah, because they have James Robinson among the three running backs that are topped at the top of this draft, Etienne's the one that I'm most curious about because he's the space guy.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what it feels like they need in that room right now. They don't really have it in Robinson. He can give you enough as a pass catcher out of the backfield. He showed that last year, but if you're going to go get another running back, I would like for it to be in that kind of mold.
Where would Robinson go off the board right now? If you could take Robinson, having played a year, and he could go back in the draft now because he was undrafted and they had this weird rule, fourth running back off the board at worst?
Probably.
I mean, you know, he's shown you. I mean, what's not to like about him? Maybe he's not going to give you a blazing 40 time, but he's shown you he can play very well against NFL-level competition. You
absolutely
don't have to project whatsoever with him. He might go higher than the fourth running back off the board. All right, let's bring in our man John Shipley now with SI.com, Jaguar Report. John, good morning. Good to catch up with you once again. Hope you had a good weekend.
Hey, hope you guys are doing awesome. I had a great one. Hope you guys did as well.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, we're just kind of checking off the days here for 2.5 weeks to go. Let's not waste our lives and wish them away, but we all want the NFL draft. I think we've all chopped it up enough now to let's get this over with and let's find out what actually is going to happen. But what are your thoughts about this team adding to the running back room? With James Robinson and Carlos Hyde, clearly the top two guys at the moment. There are some others on the depth chart. How big of an investment could you see this Jaguar team making in terms of draft capital at running back?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when people look at the Jaguar running back room, and you know, James Robinson obviously did a lot of great things last year, and we all know he's a really good player who translates, you know, moving forward into more production at the position. But I think it would be a mistake for the Jaguars to not, you know, at least look to improve the room in terms of adding that type of speed back, that type of pass catching back. So I do think that's honestly one of the offense's biggest needs right now, because for, you know, as good of a player as Robinson is, they do need a home run threat from that position. And I think, you know, obviously signing Carlos Hyde doesn't accomplish that, so I think they're going to look towards the draft to do it. Personally, picking a running back to me with one of the two first round picks, I mean, for one of the first two picks, 33 and 25, would be a complete mistake, just because they have so many needs on the board. But with that said, I truly believe that they will value the position and adding, you know, value to the passing game and aiding Trevor enough that they'll consider it at 25 and at 33. But 45 is when I would at least start considering it.
All right, so you would then at 45, if like one of the top three guys is there, potentially take a shot. Let me ask you this: if you had your choice of one of the top three running backs in this draft, Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams, in whatever order you want to rank them, at 45, or taking Pat Freiermuth if he were available there, which way would you rather go?
That's a tough one, but I honestly might go Etienne over Pat Freiermuth. I would take Freiermuth over Najee Harris and Javonte Williams. I'm a big fan of both of them. But, you know, like you guys have mentioned, Javonte Williams, very similar skill set to James Robinson.
Yeah.
Najee Harris is a terrific pass-catching back. I don't think anybody would really call him, you know, a home run threat. You know, he's a really good prospect, but I'm not sure he really offers, you know, the type of speed that maybe they're looking for. So I would go Etienne, just because I think, just in terms of skill set, I'm not sure there's a player in the draft at that position who fits what they're missing on this roster more than Etienne. And that's not even factoring his chemistry with Trevor Lawrence.
How would you feel about the Jaguars taking Pat Freiermuth as early as number 25, and what does plan B look like for the Jaguars at tight end if Freiermuth is off the board whenever they are willing to pull the trigger?
Yeah, Freiermuth is a guy, when I watch the tape, he's very clearly a good player. I don't have any, you know, concerns about him translating to the NFL. It's just you kind of wonder, you know, exactly what is his ceiling, you know. Can he be a Kyle Rudolph level tight end, which I'm sure, you know, obviously the Jaguars would rejoice over having, or can he be more than that? And I think if you're picking him at 25, you're probably hoping for a little bit more.
I think he's a guy who's right around that, you know, top 40 prospect level. I think, you know, where Cole Kmet went at 42 last year, and I think that's probably around right for Freiermuth. You know, he's a really good pass catcher, really good blocker, excellent red zone weapon, but he just doesn't really have that dynamic athleticism to really warrant a pick, you know, in that first 25 or so range. But as for backup options, you know, this isn't exactly a deep draft for tight end. You know, it's kind of Kyle Pitts, mid gap, then Freiermuth, then everybody else. You know, but Brevin Jordan has the best production of any kind of move tight end in this draft other than Pitt. But there are questions, you know, that showed up with him on the field that already kind of raised concerns over how he would test. And then he ended up testing not very well, especially compared to some of the other tight ends in this class. So I think taking him in the second round at this point would certainly be a reach. Guys like Tommy Trimble and Hunter Long are, you know, two talented guys. Trimble is really athletic, terrific blocker, but limited production as a receiver. He has the athleticism to make an impact as a receiver, but you just can't bet on him doing it right now. So for as talented as he is, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for the Jaguars. And then Hunter Long, you know, he's more of a traditional tight end, but he has a lot of receiving production the last 2 years, especially in the red zone. And he was coached by one of Urban Meyer's close friends at Boston College.
Yeah, look, I think we've all pointed out, John, that with Tyler Bowen coaching the tight ends, a role that he had at Penn State, if they go with Freiermuth, you got to feel like they've had the best intel on him of anybody in the NFL, right? I mean, you got the guy who's hands-on working with him just last year. So I'm going to feel pretty good if they, wherever they decide to pull the trigger on Freiermuth, that he's been as well vetted as anybody not named Trevor Lawrence in this draft process, honestly. A lot of talk about the Jags adding to the wide receiver core, whether that's, you know, 25, 33, 45, or maybe multiple times, even a little bit later in the draft. Do you have a particular type of receiver? I know they want speed, right? But let's presume they're going to draft. There are a lot of guys with fast 40 times. Would you rather have like that bigger outside guy, that small shifty guy? I mean, Rondale Moore, they don't build many his size that are successful in the NFL, but a lot of people like him. What type of receiver would you like to see them target if they do target one fairly early?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say the type of receiver they need is, you know, that type of quicker slot receiver type player who can excel after the catch and underneath. And what actually works out for them is this is a terrific draft for that. You know, there's not a lot of pure outside receivers in this draft who are really enticing. You have, you know, Jamar Chase and Rashad Bateman and Terrace Marshall, but after that, it's a limited group. So I actually think a receiver like Elijah Moore makes the most sense for them. I got asked the other day, you know, between Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, and Kadarius Toney, who I think fits them best. But I think Elijah Moore, just because he's a pure technician from the slot, he's also a top-level athlete, and he excels with the ball in his hands. You know, he can make people miss. He has great acceleration, and he's a threat at all three levels of the field. And I think when you look at the receiver room, that's the thing they're really missing right now. You know, they obviously have some athleticism in DJ Chark and LaVisca Chenault. Colin Johnson's a great athlete, but they don't really have that shifty guy in space who can make you miss. And, you know, for as athletic as Jamal Agnew is, his kind of value to the offense is just hypothetical right now. So I think a pure slot guy who can make people miss is what they really need. And luckily for them, this is a deep draft for it.
How do you expect them to address offensive line here in a couple weeks in the draft?
I really don't think it's going to be one of their first few picks, because I believe them when they say how committed they are to it for 2021, because obviously they didn't make any moves other than keeping Cam Robinson. So they're keeping that line intact. So I think they're going to let at least the first maybe four picks go off without making investments in it. But then I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that be a position they make really multiple picks at, you know, as the draft goes on, maybe, you know, later towards, you know, the middle of the draft or day three. Because when you look at their offensive line situation right now, you know, they at least in their eyes, they're set for 2021, but the long-term future at each of the positions is, you know, really questionable. You have several guys, you know, with 1 year remaining on their contract. Brandon Linder has 2 years remaining on his contract. You have Cam Robinson on a one-year franchise tag. And then Jawan Taylor, the jury is still out on. So I think they're going to make multiple picks at the offensive line, but I don't think they're going to do it, especially early.
Whether you think they'll do it or not, do you think it would be a mistake if they liked the guy? Let's say they liked the guy at 25 that they projected to be a left tackle of the future. And with Cam just on the franchise tag, you know, presuming he doesn't sign a long-term extension in the next couple weeks, would you be opposed to them doing something like that, even if they didn't get any immediate impact out of the pick?
Yeah, I actually think that's what
good teams would do, because in my eyes, that's long-term team building, and that's, you know, looking ahead. The Jaguars, you know, they're obviously gearing up to compete in 2021, and they're going to go out there and try to win the AFC South and all that good stuff. But in reality, their wins are going to come, you know, further along down the road. So anything you can do to build that team for further along down the road makes perfect sense in my eyes, especially when it comes to investing in a position as important as offensive line and offensive tackle. And I think a lot of the offensive tackles that would be on the board at 25 this year can also play guard. So they could even push, you know, A.J. Can, you know, at guard in 2021 and then potentially move to tackle in 2022.
How in play do you think an edge player is for the Jags at 25?
That's the question I've been going back and forth on. I really thought they were going to make it a priority during free agency, and I was honestly surprised they ended up, you know, with the only edge guy they added was John Ward. And I get the sense that they're definitely going to add to the position before, you know, before the top 100 picks is over. But I'm not sure they're going to consider it as early as number 25, because the way I see it, I think they're going to see Josh Allen and Chase on and see guys they know are going to get a lot of snaps. And then they're going to trust the depth they have on the rest of the defense to move guys around. You know, DeJuan Smoot, he's not an edge player, but he's a guy who, in certain, you know, formations, they could have him out wide. You know, War Robinson Harris, he's a guy who aligned out wide at times for Chicago. So I think they're going to feel comfortable enough in their depth to not pick one early. But I do think they should consider it as early as 25, and I think they will eventually pick it. I think 65 would probably be the sweet spot for that pick.
You can read the work of John Shipley, Jaguar Report, at si.com/NFL/Jaguars. That's one of the ways to get there. One of your recent pieces, John, we noted, was on Jason Owe, who is marvelous in terms of athletic traits, but not so marvelous in terms of production. And a lot of people are projecting him as a, you know, no pun intended, as a project, you know, in the first round. Do you think that's a fit for what the Jaguars will be looking for?
I really don't, because for as much as it's fun, because I just, you know, bang the table for long-term drafting and doing things that will help you down the road, but I don't think, just in the terms of what they're trying to do on defense and the other development of their edge players, that a guy like him makes a lot of sense, because to me, he's too similar to Caleb on Chase on from last season. And if, you know, two of your three edge guys are guys that you're kind of taking the roll of dice on their tools and then, you know, a lot of development to take place, I think that's just taking too big of a risk, especially, you know, as early as 25. I think once you get past 25, his athleticism is obviously too, you know, tantalizing, you know, to ignore. I think he you know, his pro day numbers were, I believe, 98th percentile of almost everything he tested, you know, compared to defensive end. So he is a marvelous athlete. You know, you see it on tape. And he's only been playing football since his junior year in college. So, I mean, junior year in high school. So there's obviously talent there, but I'm not sure the Jaguars, who are already kind of having to develop an edge kind of similar in his mold and Chaisson, are the right fit for him.
What are your expectations for Kalavon Chaisson going into year two for him?
I think it's going to be a good season for him, because I think he's in a defense that's going to let him thrive. But I don't think just, you know, a standard moving any 3-4 defense would mean Kalavon Chaisson, you know, is going to wind up getting sacks, because he obviously still has a lot of to do to develop as a pass rusher. But where I think he kind of excels is when they move him around and let him, you know, kind of slant, stunt, shoot inside gaps. And that's something Baltimore's defense did often with their edge players. So I think, you know, using him creatively and moving him around the formation to where he can use his athleticism, I think can help him a lot. Honestly, the usage of him kind of reminds me of when Dante Fowler was in Jacksonville, and a lot of his best plays came when they stunted him inside after lining him wide up on the edge. Chaisson reminds me a lot of that similar type of player, but I actually think Chaisson's more athletic.
All right, John Shipley, as we wrap up here, John, let's be realistic. Kyle Pitts is not a good answer here, or not an acceptable answer. Just give us, you know, as of now, we're still 2.5 weeks out. What is the ideal name to still be available for the Jaguars at 25? That has a chance to be there.
At 25, I'll go, you know, I've been saying Trayvon Morek for a week. I'm actually going to go and say, for as much as I don't think they'll be considering offensive line this early, I'll say Tevin Jenkins with Oklahoma State.
Okay.
You know, watches him, he just looks like to me somebody with Pro Bowl potential at multiple positions. I think he can play left tackle, play right tackle. He reminds me of a lot of, honestly, it's Orlando Brown, which is funny because of how often, you know, we all talk about Orlando Brown potentially to the Jaguars for weeks and weeks. So I think he'd be a top player there. I think he's worthy of being a top 15, top 20 pick.
All right, buddy. We will see. I'm sure we'll probably check in with you again at least once more before the draft comes off, and then get your reaction once it does get completed. Check out John Shipley on Twitter at @John_Shipley, or read his work at SI.com, part of the Jaguar Report team over there. John, always appreciate the visits, and we'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Hope you guys have a great one, and keep it going.
All right, buddy. Thank you. You know, I spoke with Clifton Brown of BaltimoreRavens.com on Saturday, Tony, and just kind of circled back on that Orlando Brown Jr. stuff. Like, at this point in time, what would it take? Because, you know, it would take something considerable. It would have to at least be a first-round pick in the mix. But they would still be open to moving Orlando Brown Jr. My feeling is that they didn't get anything close to what they were seeking, because – if you trade for Orlando Brown Jr., you've only got 1 year on his contract, and then you're going to have to pay him as a top-of-the-market left tackle, because that's what he has made it been clear that he wants to be paid as.
Yeah.
And that's fine if you see him that way, but that's an awful lot of investment to make for a guy to give up the pick and that kind of contract, and that's why he's still a member of the Baltimore Ravens right now.
Yeah, and certainly not heading to Jacksonville, considering you've heard Urban Meyer specifically say they're okay. They're content with what they have on the offensive line. So we've known for a while now that probably wasn't going to happen with the move here.
See, I tend to agree with John, though. Like, they're okay for now. They can get through this year. You got to be thinking beyond this year.
Absolutely.
Though. And what happens if you have one injury? You know, I mean, you got a few pieces you can move around.
Sure.
But if there is a guy that you feel is the potential left tackle long-term answer that's available at 25 or 33, man, I am – seriously consider. I mean, I don't think Christian Darrisaw is realistic at this point in time, but that would be my guy that I wish, if the one guy who's probably going to come off the board in the double-digit picks were to take a tumble, a 10-pick tumble, let it be Christian Darrisaw.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun whenever Tevin Jenkins gets drafted, just watching all the draft pundits go crazy about him for a couple minutes on TV.
Oh, because he's a nut job.
Oh, he buries people.
Yeah, and which, you know what? I got no problem if that's the selection, if you're thinking, because I do like the idea, the versatility. You know, come in and compete right away.
Yeah.
If you win a spot right away with an eye towards, you'll definitely be one of the top five next year when there'll be some turnover there. But anyway, we appreciate John Shipley stopping by from Sports Illustrated. We'll come back with this date in football, the gems from around the National Football League. If you want to be a part of it, 641-1010 on the phone lines or the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, not a whole lot happening on this date in football history, April the 12th, but a couple of notes. In 1940, the NFL changed the penalty for clipping. It formerly was 25 yards and cut down to 15. Of course, now the only penalty over 15 yards potentially is pass interference. Famous birthdays for this date, we'll just mention one. The pride of Mandarin High School by way of the University of Florida, Fred Weary, was a fourth-round pick by the Saints in the 1998 NFL draft, had seven interceptions in his six seasons in the league. Fred Weary, 47 years young today, so happy birthday to him. That's what we have for you on this date in football history.
Now, gems around the NFL, brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jacks Beach.
Sean Watson's lawyer, Rusty Harden, said during a news conference on Friday that there were some consensual encounters between Watson and some of the 22 women that have filed a lawsuit against Watson, but said that Watson did not engage in any acts that were not, quote, mutually desired. Two judges in Texas ruled on Friday that 13 of the 22 women involved in the lawsuits have to publicly release their names, and both legal sides agreed to the release of a 14th name later in the day. The names are expected to be made public by Wednesday. Free agent defensive lineman Jadeveon Clowney has a second visit scheduled for today with the Cleveland Browns. Clowney is expected to sign with Cleveland, who he visited with at the end of the March without any deal getting done, but a second visit today probably indicating that they're going to get something knocked out. Seattle has re-signed defensive back Demarius Randall, and reports indicate that they plan on playing Randall at corner this season after he spent last season playing safety and nickel. for the Seahawks. Cornerback Caleb Farley told Peter King for his Football Morning in America story today that he got, quote, a lot of positive feedback from the NFL doctors. The NFL doctors confirmed I would be ready for the season, and they told me this is definitely not a chronic thing, end quote. Farley was among the prospects that were in Indianapolis over the weekend being evaluated by NFL medical personnel. Tight end Thaddeus Moss has been released by the Washington football team. Moss, the son of Hall of Fame wide receiver Randy Moss, joined Washington as an undrafted free agent last year. He spent last season on Washington's injured reserve, never appearing in a game for the football team. And former Atlanta and Chicago wide receiver Taylor Gabriel announced his retirement after a six-year career yesterday. And former Tennessee Titans running back Eddie George has been hired as the new head coach for Tennessee State.
All right, thank you, Tony. Speaking of Peter King, as you were, I've got an interesting quote from his Football Morning in America column that we'll get to here coming up in a few minutes. Also, over at NFL.com, they've got a little roundtable on who the best pass catcher is or who should be the first one selected in this draft. Honestly, I'm surprised that, and you can probably figure out who the three guys are, but the three guys got consideration. I think it's a two-man race, and for me, it's really pretty clearly who the number one should be, in my opinion, but we'll get to that coming up as well. 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board. Let's get Dominic on the north side next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Dom.
Not much. A little razzle-dazzle. How y'all doing this morning?
We're doing just fine. There's always a lot of razzle-dazzle going on.
A whole lot of razzle.
What can we do for you?
Definitely, I was calling because I wanted to check and see how y'all felt about trading down from pick 25. Because there's a lot of good players in the second round, and it seems like you can't love or you don't love anybody at 25, but you really like a lot of people at 33 and 45, you know what I'm saying? So I was just trying to get y'all ideas on trading down from 25 and, you know what I'm saying, who we could realistically pick up.
Sure. Look, we can all sit here and say we don't love anyone at 25. We don't know what they feel, right? So they may love somebody that's on the board at 25. They may have a guy who's their 18th highest rated player available, you know, for instance. And I don't know who that player would be. You know what I mean? Because we're not privy to their big board. But in general, if you listen to the pundits, and again, they're not running the Jaguars draft. But, Tony, if you just talk about the consensus from people – you know, there are all kinds of people that evaluate the draft. But the ones that do it pretty consistently year over year for the major outlets, if you just take them, I think the feeling is that, yeah, probably from pick 25 to 45, there may not be a whole that much difference between the guy that you're going to get. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a team that has a specific need for a player that wants to come up, I'm wide open for business with the 25th pick to move back, because I don't think – like, you know, I've seen several projections where the Jaguars fall back or drop to 31, right, and pick up a couple of additional picks with Kansas City moving up to get a player. Mm-hmm. If that's the case and you stay in the first round, you still have that fifth-year option available on that selection and you get a couple more draft picks, yeah, I'm open for that. But at the same time, I understand why a team would say, well, you know, if we get a, let's say we get a couple extra fourth round picks, well, are they going to have the same impact? We think this guy that we're getting at 25 is like a blue chipper rated ahead. It's impossible to know what their interest level would be in it, but yeah, I don't think it's out of the range of possibility whatsoever. I don't really see falling back into the second round as being as much of a possibility. That's a pretty big jump to make up there, but I'd be open to it. I just want to hear what the offer is. But if I'm dropping out, let's say, down to pick 34 or lower, there better be at least a second-round pick plus some coming my way to make that drop.
Yeah, I'm trying to think through, of all the players we've been discussing for weeks and months now, is there anybody that, if I was there at 25, I wouldn't be willing to move and risk not getting? Right? Like, in my mind, I'm not sure that anybody we've discussed rises to that level for me.
For us.
Yeah. That doesn't mean that they don't rise to that level for the team. And part of that, I think, is because we've discussed 20 different players at 25.
Right.
Right? Like, it's not we're locked in on a position, a player, anything like that. It's we've talked about it. Virtually any position outside a quarterback and a specialist that they drafted at 25, we'd be like, yeah, I can see where that makes sense for the football team, right? Like, there's even a scenario where if they were to take Travis Etienne at 25, it makes sense to me, you know, to bring in a running back that can do what he can do at 25. So it's so wide open that I think the fans, if we were just to ask, would you rather them stay at 25 or move down?
And right, yeah. Assuming that the compensation is reasonable.
Yeah,
right?
I think overwhelmingly fans would be like, well, let's trade down and get some more picks.
Right, there'd be a few that would be like, I got to have Rondell Moore, yeah. I got to have this guy or that guy. And, you know, maybe the Jags will feel the same way. Maybe it will be ETN. Maybe Caleb Farley falls there and they don't have the concerns about his back after the medical recheck. And you're saying, man, this guy is corner our biggest need? Maybe not, but if we really feel like this guy may be the best corner in the draft and you can get him at 25, which would be pretty rare, or maybe they love one of the edge rushers. Again, these are things we can't know about their thought process and preparation. But, yeah, just as Dominic asked, would I be open to it? Would you be open to it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like we're not open. Number one, the number one pick – we're not open to it because there's nothing that realistically could be thrown at them that would get me to consider moving down, for instance, right? Like, you know, this
the movement at that point in the draft has happened already.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and looking at like San Francisco, even if they did give up all those picks to you, they don't have first rounders beyond this year for the next couple of years. So what would it even take? What do they even have to entice you to drop down a couple of spots? You know, could the Jets blow them out of the water? I mean, I suppose they could. You don't get any indication that it's going to go that way.
No, yeah.
So, hey, look, we're pretty locked in. I think the toaster was a good investment. You're going to be just, you know, it's not going to be a waste. And Trev will be the guy after that. Yeah, I'm open for business. I'm open for business at 33, especially because that is the one where, you know, you have more than 10 minutes to figure it out. You're on the clock with 25, and maybe you're fielding a couple of calls, and you got to decide quickly. With 33, the draft is over after the first round for the night. You come back the next day. You've got all day to have guys go, oh, you know what? This guy, I can't believe this guy is sitting there, and we're four picks away. I don't think he's going to make it to us. Do we take that chance and go up? And more teams that wouldn't have considered making a trade up all of a sudden see a player sitting there that they have graded highly. And for that matter, the Jags may have a player sitting there. Maybe he's their 20th rated player, and he's sitting there, and it's like, man, we can't trade out of this spot unless we get blown away. But it's the catbird seat, man. That's where you want to be. That you have the hammer. Either you trade back and accumulate significant draft capital, or you sit there and you get a guy that you feel probably was a first round value that slid all the way through. But I'm open for business, man, at everything pretty much except the number one overall pick heading into this NFL draft. Dominic, thank you for the call. We'll come back. We'll take a look at Peter King's Football Morning in America column, Unnamed Coaches. You got to love the unnamed sources, but that's how they do it, man. They're not going to put their name, you know, on draft season on exactly how they feel about certain prospects. So we'll trust that Peter King's got some good sources and look at that, and also who the folks at NFL.com are projecting who should be the first pass catcher off the board in the upcoming draft in 2.5 weeks. With Tony Smith and ET, I'm Mike Dempsey. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah, I think when people look at the Jaguars running back room, and, you know, James Robinson obviously did a lot of great things last year, and we all know he's a really good player who translates, you know, moving forward into more production at the position. But I think it would be a mistake for the Jaguars to not, you know, at least look to improve the room in terms of adding that type of speed back, that type of pass catching back stuff.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
James Robinson, by the way, so the Jags tweet this out over the weekend, visited with families on the Feeding Northeast Florida corner market, helped provide them with dairy products that had been donated. So he's out there, as they said, when he's not being fed the football on game day, he's giving back and helping feed the community. And, oh, by the way, these kind of things go on all the time. NFL players do these kind of things, publicized or not. The team tries to publicize them, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're doing good things in the community, and we appreciate that. So there's another reason. Do you need another reason to root for James Robinson? What a great story he was.
Oh, yeah.
And continues
Fantastic.
To be.
Yeah.
So, you know, I personally hope that they continue to treat him as the lead back on this football team. But we shall see coming up over the next few weeks. E.T., before we go any further, if you would be so kind, remind us, today's question of the day is what exactly?
The Jaguars Today question of the day brought to you by Carpetman Flooring, where estimates are free all day, every day, and they got the best deals in town. Reads, who was the best fourth-round pick in Jacksonville Jaguars history. Reggie Barlow, David Garrard, Ernest Wilford, or Cecil Shorts? Followed by the bonus question.
Yes.
Oh, the bonus question reads, who was the best fourth-round quarterback in Jacksonville Jaguars? Either A, Rob Johnson, or B, David Garrard.
Right. The polls are different for two different reasons. Who is the best on-the-field player for the Jaguars? Clearly, David Garrard is that guy out of the fourth round. But if you want to factor in the trade and what the Jags got for Rob Johnson, you're welcome to do that in the second poll because I'm pretty sure we did not include him the first time we did one of these, and we got a bunch of, where's Rob Johnson? Rob Johnson, Rob Johnson. So I thought, if we put him in the regular poll, is it just going to be a runaway because the reason you vote for Rob Johnson is you equate him to Fred Taylor? But David Garrard's running away with both polls.
Nice.
So there you go. Good for you, DG9. He's got 89.3% in the actual, you know, factoring in only what the player did as a Jaguar poll. Basically 90% of the vote. Cecil Shorts with 5.5. We shamed a few people apparently into voting for Reggie Barlow. He had like 162 votes in. He had zero.
Yeah.
Best return man in team history. 2.9%, and Ernest Wilford getting 2.3%. Look, it doesn't really matter. If you're not voting for Garrard, your vote is not going to go to the guy who's going to win the poll, and that's fine. And then David Garrard versus Rob Johnson, 72.8 to 27.2. And obviously everyone voting for the 27.2 is clearly factoring in the trade. But it's going to be DG all the way. So far, Tony.
Yes.
I think this is a bit of a shakeup from the first time. I want to say Manawai won the third round poll the first time we did this a few years back. Not even sure if we had Linder in it at that point in time. You know,
probably not.
Probably, you're right. He'd only been with the team for a couple of years, whatever the case. So, yeah, this time out, you had Fred Taylor. Tony Boselli won it when we did it the first time a few years ago. MJD won it both times for the second round. And now Linder takes down round three. David Garrard will take down round four. And we'll clean up the rest as the week goes along right here.
Yeah. Will anybody that was on that 1996 football team win one of these polls?
Good question.
Yeah.
Have to go. I'm gonna miss who was, you know, in my mind. I'll leave somebody out who was drafted in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round. But
yeah, because we still got it to come. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna say no.
Probably not.
Right. I mean, now that Pacelli is coming gone, I'm gonna say no. But that's all right. You know.
Yeah.
That's the way
okay.
It is. We're taking the pulse of the fan base as we like to do. Peter King in Football Morning in America quoted a middle-aged coach whose team is in the market to draft a quarterback. Could be damn half the league, right?
Well, a middle-aged coach. Whose team may be looking at quarterback.
I think that means you're not quoting Belichick.
Okay.
Right? Because say he's, 69 years old? I think that's outside of middle age now, right? Could it be Ron Rivera, like with Washington? It could be any number of guys, right? So I guess it wouldn't be one of the young whippersnapper. Like, it wouldn't be Robert Saleh. Right, he's not a middle-aged coach. Maybe it's Urban Meyer. I think he would fit in that category, but I don't get the sense that was him. Doesn't really matter because we know who our guy is. But quoting a middle-aged coach whose team is in the market to draft a quarterback, they say Trevor Lawrence is clearly the number one pick.
Okay.
But after that, he has personally three receivers. We can assume that's Chase, Waddle, Smith. Or Chase Smith, Waddle, or whatever order you want to list those guys in. Three receivers, a tight end, that's Kyle Pitts, and two offensive tackles. I assume that's Sewell and Slater, who are the top on most boards. All of those ahead of any other quarterback in just terms of actually evaluating and grading these guys, right? But that the thirst for franchise quarterbacks is understandable and will obviously result in a bunch of guys going off the top. It's nice, though, and I understand why you do it because, look, you can have all the Jamar Chases in the world. You know, if you don't have – ultimately, you got to have a quarterback unless you've got a really special collection of talent across the board. You got to have a quarterback that can be a difference maker and can put a team on his back for a playoff series or a stretch. I say series like it's the NBA. You know what I'm saying? A playoff run, a postseason run. And can you do that Yeah, you can. But how hard is it? We saw how hard it is to maintain that kind of a team, right? To where you all the pieces are pulling together and playing at a high level, and the defense is excellent. Maybe the offensive line's really good. Maybe you have a strong running game. And your quarterback's just good enough to not kill you. And in 2017, Blake Bortles was that, right? It's just not gonna kill you. At least second half of the season, you felt that way about him. At times, maybe you did feel like he was going to kill you, but the talent around him was so good. But how easy is it to maintain that? But, man, you know, you sit there, and the guys were going back and forth to Tony Boselli on this issue this morning about this. You know, and I know what Tony's saying. Tony's like, look, if you need the quarterback, you got to have him. You got to get him. And their point was, well, you know, should the Jags have Kerry Collins or Tony Boselli as their guy? You know, or you know, do you pass on a great talent for a lesser quarterback because of the value of the position? Now, times have changed since 95.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you do. You know, maybe the quarterback is so important that if you don't have that in today's game, you don't have much of a choice or a chance to really win the whole thing unless you put together that really special season. And I think San Fran will be a good test to this, right? A couple of years ago, they got to the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo, and then injuries set in. Garoppolo couldn't put the team on his back. He got hurt because he seems to always get hurt, and they fell way off and only won 6 games last year. So now they're taking a big swing to come up to get in range to get what they hope is an elite quarterback and add it to that mix. I just be so thankful that the Jets won that second
game. Yeah, don't have to mess around with it. Right, like just have to mess around.
The first game, as it turned out, yeah. One would have been enough.
You go back and you look, and talking about trying to win on a consistent level, right? It's not that you can't win big with a quarterback that's not a future Hall of Fame type player at the quarterback position. It's not that you can't win a Super Bowl with somebody else playing the quarterback position. We've seen it. It's just when you compare the numbers of guys that do it and find a way to put it together for a year, as opposed to the guys who put it together year after year after year after year. You look, going back to 2000, right, in the history of the Super Bowl, you go back to 2000, so that was Trent Dilfer with mm-hmm. Baltimore that year, won a Super Bowl. There's probably 3 quarterbacks that have won a Super Bowl since 2000 that aren't going to wind up likely in the Hall of Fame.
Brad Johnson.
Brad Johnson would be one of them. I think you... People have their debates about Eli Manning, but whatever.
Well, I think Eli will end up, whether, you know, you can debate whether he should, but yeah. I do think Eli will end up.
Joe Flacco, Nick Foles. That's probably the list.
Yeah.
Honestly, of guys that have won a Super Bowl in the past, we're going on close to 25
years.
Right,
so you're talking 15% of the time. Basically, yeah. If you call it 20 years, we'll call it 15% of the time.
And none of those guys that we mentioned really had a chance to play for more than one. It's not that you don't have a chance to win one. It's that if you want to put yourself and your franchise in a position to compete in the playoffs year after year after year, the quarterback is the biggest key to making that happen.
And the thing of it is, who is a better quarterback in your opinion, Philip Rivers or Joe Flacco?
Rivers.
I think most people would say that, yeah. Right? I mean, I guess you can make the argument that Flacco was the better playoff performer, therefore he is the better quarterback.
Sure,
right?
You can, yeah.
Because he did have some really big-time playoff performances.
No doubt.
Flacco did.
And was, I mean, he was so good against the Patriots.
But point being, you can get the better quarterback even, and it's still, there's nothing is guaranteed to you. But it felt like Rivers would give you, like if Rivers were with Baltimore's defense, mm-hmm. I think he would have given you better opportunities.
Yes.
You know, I think you would have been, I think you would have been in the big game more often, given the same set of circumstances. If Flacco had been traded out to the Chargers, I don't think he would have ever gotten that team to the Super Bowl. Neither did Rivers. So who's to say, right? Mm-hmm. But in the end, you know, all these theories are great. Theories are theories, right? And somebody's going to win the Super Bowl, and if it's not you, that doesn't mean that what they did, their formula, is absolutely the right way to do it. I do believe, I mean, that's the beauty of this. The Jaguars, there are no questions about it. You don't have to guess who the best player is, in my opinion, or the best quarterback, or the biggest need you're filling. Everything's all in alignment. And that's why we hope this offseason is going to be a special one in terms of resetting the uh, the path that the Jaguars are on.
No doubt. And heck, you can push it back all the way to 1990 if you wanted to, talking about Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. And if you took the whole decade of the 90s, you add two names to the list of guys that aren't going to be in the Hall of Fame. Jeff Hostetler and Mark Rippon.
Mm. And that's they were it. Early.
Yeah, that was 90 and 91. Troy Aikman won three.
So you basically
in the 90s.
Had, what, like six guys then? Those two guys, Dilfer, Brad Johnson, Flacco, and who was the other one you said?
Foles.
Foles, yeah.
Yeah. How and you're talking 30 years.
Nick Foles, right. Yeah. So that's still, that's.
It's not nothing. It's right, not that you have 20%. No chance. Yeah, but right, if you're so going to be one of the teams that's competing for it,
right.
Need a quarterback.
You want the 80% likelihood. Of course, if you then break it down and say, well, that 80% likelihood, let's really look at that. Troy Aikman grabbed three of them. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady grabbed seven of them. Mm-hmm. That's 10 in the last. So one-third of the time, you better have had Brady or Aikman. Right? I mean, yeah. So, you know, and it's like, was Eli Manning the best quarterback? He was great for two postseason runs.
Yes, he was.
I do think Eli is more, you look at his numbers cumulatively, and they're more up there, like the cumulative numbers to some of the greats, but he feels more like a Joe Flacco to me. Mm-hmm. You know, he just happened to have done it twice.
Sure.
Let's just get one.
You don't have to worry about it. I mean, and that's where the whole discussion starts is all this, these other quarterbacks aren't as good a prospect as these other, this list of six guys, right? Well, even with that being said, you're not having to worry about any of the other quarterbacks.
Right.
Because even with all that being said, Trevor Lawrence was the guy at the top of that list as the guy that should go number one. You don't have to worry, like, you don't have to play the head games of, well, should we take this or that? Should we really be looking at quarterback or should we be looking at Kyle Pitts? We're drafting third. Like, that kind of thing, don't have to worry about it. You got
Although,
Trevor Lawrence at one.
There are people who will tell you that Kyle Pitts is the best player in this draft. That's the narrative out there. And he may be best player. But, you know.
He plays tight end compared to quarterback.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you can give me all the Travis Kelce's in the world, and they're not as valuable as Patrick Mahomes.
No.
Right? So, you know, as great as Kelce is, he is not the straw that stirs that particular drink in Kansas City as much as Mahomes is. All right, when we come back, we will look at NFL.com, the little roundtable on who they think should be the first pass catcher selected in this upcoming NFL draft, and look back at our dueling questions of the day, two that David Garrard is going to walk away with victories in. Coming up with Tony Smith and ET, I'm Mike Dempsey, Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I think the play I'll always remember was in the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State, when he just rips off that 67-yard touchdown run. And this was not long after he had just been absolutely drilled, took a huge hit. But I just remember that being the total embodiment of, like, just how insanely competitive he is and how gritty he was. But that play I think I'll always remember as just a defining Trevor Lawrence moment.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
That was Grace Rayner from the Trevor Cast. She covers Clemson for The Athletic. That was episode 7 last week. Only three fresh ones to go, but that's more than Falcon and the Winter Soldier have in store for you. So, got that going for you.
Yeah.
But I've been enjoying Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Yeah. I mean, Marvel could really just...
It'd be hard to disappoint at this point.
They could show somebody just taking a poop on the floor, and I'd watch it, honestly.
What's going to happen
if it had that Marvel Comics opening montage to it?
I'm enjoying the beginning of Phase 4.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With WandaVision and this has been fun.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, and they will. I'm all about it. So, anyway, we always preview the Trevor Cast with Hayes Carline on Tuesdays, and if you enjoy and maybe plan your day, and why wouldn't you, around Hayes' visit with us, know you're going to have to move it up a little bit because we are moving it up to 10:20 tomorrow. Hayes has some things to do, so we're going to get him on a little bit early tomorrow. Also efforting Tony Pauline from the Pro Football Network, so we'll be talking, guess what, a little NFL draft.
Mm.
Coming up, speaking of the draft, today's questions of the day. E.T., what we got?
The Jaguars Today question of the day brought to you by Carpetman Flooring with SM Safri all day, every day reads, who was the best fourth-round draft pick in Jacksonville Jaguars team history? In 96 was Reggie Barlow. 2002 was David Garrard. 2004, Ernest Wilford. And 2011 was Cecil Shorts.
Bonus question.
And that bonus question reads, who was the best fourth-round quarterback pick in Jacksonville Jaguars history? You got two options, Rob Johnson or David Garrard.
All right, let's make this the brief subject of today's 10-10 take.
10-10. This 10-10 take is brought to you by Peninsular Pest Control at CritterGetter.com.
All right, clearly, for me, clearly I say, and 89.5% agree, David Garrard is the best on-the-field Jaguar selected for what he did for this football team. Second-best quarterback in franchise history up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies to Sam Darnold for his great two-game run last year to help the Jaguars get who we hope will end up being the best quarterback in franchise history. I personally think out of the rest of these guys, Reggie Barlow is next for me. That's really more the debate between Barlow, Wilford, and Shorts. I think Shorts and Wilford are very similar when you look at their production. Apologies to Seth Payne, anybody else we may have left out. Reggie Barlow would get my vote as the next most impactful fourth rounder. But if I'm going, which was the best fourth round pick in team history, factoring in everything, I would go with Rob Johnson. Because, I mean, it's very clear lineage from Johnson. You draft him, plays one game, couple years later, you're able to trade him for a couple of picks, one of which turns into Fred Taylor. Imagine if Tavian Banks had stayed healthy, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Tavian Banks might be one of the top five running backs in team history if he stays healthy. You know, maybe it's an early Freddie T. Mojo combo prior to Mojo coming on board, right? And just Fred alone, though. I mean, as much I love me some DG, Fred Taylor meant more to this organization and franchise. So I would vote for Rob Johnson in that. But if you're talking about who's the best impactful on the field Jaguar, David Garrard should be running away with this as he is.
Yeah. DG9 clearly is the best fourth round pick that they've made for what he brought to him on the field. I agree with you on the Rob Johnson thing, too. I think the Jaguars have had three players that are Hall of Fame worthy players in their history: Tony Boselli, Jimmy Smith, Fred Taylor. And one of those players is the fruit of them having selected Rob Johnson in the fourth round and Buffalo seeing him play one game and deciding this is the guy. Like, that's what they decided after seeing him play one game, and the Jags turned a fourth round pick into a Hall of Fame running back.
Well, I mean, Fred Taylor won the poll as the best first round pick in Jaguar team history. So if you think he's the best, and I likely would then win a poll if the same people were voting as the best draft pick in team history, I would suspect, even over Maurice, who got incredible value on him,
no doubt,
in round two. And if you look at it that way, that's what Rob Johnson turned into then. Anyway, that's a look at it any way you want. We're just doing these chronologically. Tomorrow we'll do the fifth round, and yes, they won't be as exciting maybe going forward as they've been in the early rounds, but we'll go through them all nonetheless. I've been mentioning this piece at NFL.com. Who should be the first pass catcher off the board? Just five, so it's a little bit of a round table here. Brian Baldinger said Ja'Marr Chase will be. The question is who should be. I don't know if that he will be even the first off the board. Depends on what happens there at four. Does Atlanta trade out? If Atlanta stays there, I think they're much more likely to take Kyle Pitts. Adam Rank said the first pass catcher off the board should be Kyle Pitts, so one and one. Joe Thomas says, I don't care about Devontae Smith's size. The Heisman Trophy winner is the top receiving weapon in this draft class. Great football players find a way to succeed no matter their physical stature. I don't know if he is the best receiving weapon. He had the best year this year. Ja'Marr Chase didn't play this year.
No, yeah.
And there's no way in hell I would take Devontae Smith over Kyle Pitts. Just wouldn't. I mean, you could play Kyle Pitts at receiver if you wanted to. They're completely different kinds of players, to be sure. Mark Ross said Kyle Pitts, most talented player in the draft, regardless of position. And Charlie Casserly said you can make an argument for Pitts, but he'd go with Chase, who he likens to Julio Jones and Mike Evans in talent. Not the same stature as those guys. It's interesting because Evans got to be at least 6'5", I would think, right? And Julio's 6'6". Chase come in about 6 foot and a half inch, something like that, 6 foot and 3/8".
Something in there, yeah.
He says to him, now here's the question. A great wide receiver impacts the game more than a great tight end. Is that true? Might be true.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, because, you know, you're running more, like, if you have a great wide receiver, you send him long, you're taking two players with him. But I would think two players are pretty much following Travis Kelce everywhere he goes as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the same type of players. Maybe you don't have the over-the-top safety on a guy like that, but you might have him on Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts, I mean, Travis Kelce is tremendous. He may be a better football player than Kyle Pitts when it's all said and done, when you compare their careers. But is Kyle Pitts a better athlete than Travis Kelce? I think he is. And Travis Kelce's no slouch now.
No, yeah.
You know, I'm just talking about, like, if you're going to build an athletic specimen.
Oh, yeah, Pitts tests off the chart.
You'd probably want, like, 15 more pounds on Kyle Pitts to make him, like, the perfect tight end prospect. Something like 15, 20 pounds if he could maintain that level of athleticism. But you give me any one of those guys, Pitts, man. Pitts, you can line him up anywhere in the formation. I mean, who's the best red zone weapon in this class? Got to be Kyle Pitts.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he can juke you. He can run and get open in a short area. But you can just – you want to talk about throwing fades, man. I mean, or just high-pointing the ball. Just throw it up. There's going to be defensive backs, tall defensive backs.
Yeah.
That can do nothing with this guy. The tallest ones in the league. He's got the longest wingspan of any wide receiver or tight end measured at the combine in the last 20 years.
Well, yeah, look, obviously there's going to be a step up going from the SEC even to the National Football League, but if you watch Gators football last year, when they got inside the 20-yard line, they could have told you where they were going to throw it, and
didn't matter.
Just a better player than anybody that he was going against. That gap should be smaller as he goes into the National Football League, obviously, but still, as far as a red zone weapon, no. I don't think any of the other guys are Kyle Pitts.
And I realize Kyle Pitts didn't go to the combine this year. I'm talking about, you compare him, that's where you get the measurements of all these guys and their wingspan at the combine historically. By the way, Sean Salisbury was doing a thread today, friend of the program, on great nicknames. And the first one that came up is one I did not remember. I probably had heard it at some point along the line, and it made me laugh. Thomas Two Sandwiches Hamilton.
How did he get that one?
You can only imagine, right? Because my man wasn't skipping. What did Taco Bell try to call it? Fourth meal or fifth, something like that?
Yeah, fourth meal,
point in time, that was so corny. My man was like, yeah, I'm going to get that in. Second, third, and fourth meal all at lunch. All right, we will now direct our attention out to the Coastal Equipment Guggen Open. Let's welcome in XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet, keeping 1010XL on track with wholesale prices and premium service. Tire Outlet, Jacksonville's largest locally owned automotive repair shop.
All right, Joe Coward is out at the Coastal Equipment Guggen Open at Hidden Hills. Good morning, Joe.
Man, what a gorgeous day. Light breeze, sun kind of passing right over the clubhouse right now, man. It's awesome today.
It does look awesome. The weather gods brought it all yesterday, which is fantastic. We got great weather today. I got to ask you, I know you're a big golf aficionado. The Masters is the Masters, but was it the most boring Masters you can remember watching?
You know, I'm like you and probably a lot of other people. I'm praying for a little carnage. Heck, even when Hideki hit his opening tee shot, Mike, it was, you know, offline. And you're like, okay, open with a double.
Right.
And then he hits a nice shot out of there. He gets up and down. And you're like, son of a gun. And, you know, he is that guy. He's that sturdy guy. Now, I've seen his putter go away before, and it's not like I wasn't rooting against him. I just wasn't rooting for him for all the reasons. And when Xander Schauffele he made eagle at 15 before he hit the water at 16, right? I'm pretty sure.
He made birdie. Yeah.
Birdie.
Okay, he made birdie, and that was when Hideki made bogey. That's right. Okay, so a two-shot swing there, and then we were all thinking the same thing. Come on, make it happen.
Just want 16. Drama, right?
I mean, yeah.
And I do root for American golfers, but I was rooting for Spieth because Spieth has a bunch of – like, I would root for Spieth and Koepka because I want them to – you know, I want some American golfer to be the next to get to 10 majors one day down the line, right? And they've got great starts. So it's nothing against Hideki Matsuyama, who won here as well. But this took the drama out of it for me, whether it was Schauffele or anybody else. Yeah.
Yeah, Hideki won the one-day tournament here last year when he was the guy who shot the 63 before they canceled it.
True.
And he has won World Golf Championships. I think he's won – six times right now, I'm pretty sure. But the thing is that Asia is, they love golf. They'll go crazy for this win. It's huge from an international standpoint. But you are right. We like Spieth winning last week. You would have loved to have seen him. He now has four of the last five top three finishes, something in that neighborhood. I mean, the guy's been all around it. since he hit a couple in the water at 12 going back a few years. And I would have loved to have seen him make a run, but he wasn't able to either.
Yeah, look, it doesn't have to be speed. If Schauffele ended up being the guy there, if they were tied on the 18th tee box, that's what I'm looking for, you know, just something like that. But it's all good, man. Enjoy the day out there at Hidden Hills. What will you guys be getting into today?
Definitely talking about the Masters and you know, kind of playing off of that American theme, but then also digging into the draft. You know, the countdown is on, so we're all just like you, just like Tony, just like everybody, waiting to see what that 25th selection is going to be. So we'll definitely have a bunch of draft talk today.
Right, isn't it funny, right? We're waiting on – like we're
not
at
even
that,
number
the
one.
Point now. All right, we got him. Yeah. It's all wrapped up. The toaster's his. It's engraved. It's fine. And we're very happy about that. The draft for us starts – at 25. Joe, have a good show today, man. Enjoy it out there.
All right, man.
All right, Coastal Equipment Guggen Open at Hidden Hills. That course bedevils me, Tony. Let me tell you what. I can come in on a hot streak.
Those hills are hiding.
Let me tell you what, brother. I can be playing great for 2 weeks in a row, not hitting a bad shot, and I get to Hidden Hills, and it just all goes to you know what for me. That's me. It gets in my head. Not everybody's that way. All right, that'll do it for us today. So, again, tomorrow, Hayes Carline a little bit earlier, previewing the Trevor Cast, talking Jaguar football with us at 10:20, and then hopeful to have Tony Pauline from Pro Football Network perhaps joining us in the second hour tomorrow as we march that much closer to the NFL draft and a restructuring of the foundations of power in the National Football League. All right, for Tony Smith, for ET, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thank you for listening to Jaguars Today. Back again tomorrow from 10 to noon here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go. 3!